This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
What is going on, party people in the house? Welcome back to what I hope is your favorite podcast here on the Yak Network. It's your main man, Anwar Richardson, and welcome to your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast. Now, you know, I know that I've been doing 120-something episodes in, and some people are late to the party. They're probably wondering, like, why do you title this thing your Drunk Uncle, all right? Because it is somewhat of a random name, but here's the thing about the drunk uncle, right? Everybody's got a drunk uncle, right? You got the drunk uncle who comes out to the barbecue. Your drunk uncle is usually pretty funny. Your drunk uncle is often entertaining. Your drunk uncle is going to do some silly stuff, but every once in a while, drunk uncle's going to drop some knowledge on you, and you're going to say, wow, drunk uncle really knows something, you know, when he actually was not passed out. So that's why I call this your Drunk Uncle's Sports Podcast, because I want to make sure we're funny. I want to make sure we're entertaining. I want to make sure everyone has a good time. And also, want to, at the end of the day, make sure everyone gets some knowledge. So with that being said, speaking of knowledge, you know your man's got a sponsor. You know, your boy's got a sponsor. I know I'm supposed to be more professional about it. I know it's supposed to be act all coy and stuff, but man, doing this for a few years and to land a sponsor, man, I'm hype. And this the Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast is sponsored by the Lowy Law Firm. Adam Lowy is one of the top professional injury lawyers in Austin. Adam is a proud graduate of University of Texas School of Law and started his law firm in 2005. Adam helps people who have been injured in car crashes. Sucks when that happens. Slip and falls. My neck and my back. Dog bites. Now, that would suck. I hate it when people don't keep their dogs on leashes. That is one thing that annoys the hell out of me. Just because your dog likes you, don't mean everybody else's dog, we want to be around your dog. Put your dog on a leash. You never know how the dog's going to react. And other assorted ways. Look. Adam is actively involved in every case that he handles. He's always available to talk through talk or text. So you can apparently just hit him up whenever you want to, and Adam's just going to respond. But look, all jokes aside, if you or your loved one has been injured, call the Lowy Law Firm today at 512-280-0800. That is 512-280-0800. 0800. When they ask who referred you, tell them it's Anwar Richardson or say the drunk uncle. They may not know, the receptionist may not know who the drunk uncle is, so just go with Anwar just to be safe. I hope everyone's having a good time, man. We are getting close to football season, man, but let me tell you, I am feeling good. You know, I told you guys the other week when I had catch on that I had that balloon sinuplasty procedure. You know, I'm a week removed from that. I am feeling really, really good about it. You know what I've noticed? This is so good for, like, self-care and taking care of yourself. You know, I've noticed since I've had this procedure done, for those who aren't familiar, like I have sleep apnea that I've been battling and had a deviated septum. And they basically had to go in there, balloon sinus surgery, and kind of clean out everything in there. One thing I always noticed for years is that in the mid-afternoon is when I would start to hit a wall and really start to get tired and fatigued. And it was always a battle just to kind of get through several hours. And sometimes I would go out to a practice at UT and I'd just go sleep in my car for like 30 minutes before going out to a practice in the evening time. And since the surgery, y'all, I have felt good all day long. I haven't felt tired. I haven't felt fatigued. I haven't felt none of that. I feel good. I would sometimes like fall asleep early in the evening because, again, I'm so tired. None of that, man. It's like 10, 11 o'clock at night. I'm like, man, you need to go to bed, man. You need to go get some rest, man. And I'm sleeping through the night. I'm starting to feel good. It's short, but I would say I am so grateful that I got this thing done for my long-term health, being around for my boys, because, mom, I got a two-year-old, you know. Talk about trying to live a long life. Whew. Boy. That's what happens when you got a weak pull-out game. But anyway, he's still here. I love him. So we do good. Then, listen, before we get into the crux of the show, let me tell you one thing that happened to me this week. So, listen, I am not, like, gangster, really. I mean, you can hear in my voice, like, all right, Anwar is not a gangster. But, you know, grew up in the inner city, right? Had all this type of upbringing. So you're still certain things that if you grew up in that, you hold to be true. And when you live in the suburbs, things change, right? And you, so there's this struggle. Like, if you ever watch, like, Blackish, you would totally get this. There's always, like, the struggle of the black person who lives in the suburbs, who still wants to keep it real and still wants to identify with his roots, but still is also in a new environment. So, you know, there's certain things you got to do. Like, you can't put your clothes out and, like, have a clothesline out in the house because you got HOAs and stuff like that. So I found myself today doing the most suburban shit that I have ever freaking done in my life. I am talking about my black card might be revoked right now. Like that's how I have to frame this. So I go on a walk every morning. Go on a 2-mile walk every morning. Great for my cardio and everything like that, right? And a couple days ago, I saw these seats that are out on the sidewalk. I say like seats. I gotta find a better way to describe it better than seats. It's leather chair, right? It's a leather chair. Two really nice like leather chairs, but clearly the owners decided like they didn't want it anymore, and they were gonna try to get rid of it. So I saw it about 2 days ago. Walked past it. I was like, huh, that's okay. Look nice. Whatever. And then I walk past it today, and I start thinking to myself, you know, drunk uncle could always use a little something, little furniture. And I thought to myself, you know, this might be good to just put out on the patio area because I really need to get into it. I walked past it, right? And I was like, this might be good to kind of put out on the patio area, you know, have some nice chairs out there. And so I went home, got my car, put down the back seats, and the chair's too big to put in the trunk. So you know how you're just able to get like half of it? So you know you get the back in. So the back portion is in the trunk. And it was able to sit perfectly for me to get both of them. Man, I seriously think I'm going to do some like restoration. Like I'm looking into furniture restoration places and I'm going to send them these pictures because man, these things are heavy. And here's the one thing I know, like when you have like heavy furniture, it's nice furniture. Like it's not. And look, the people house, this was outside of like, they had a really nice house. Like they had a nice, nice house. So I know they spent a pretty penny on this like years ago. Like I know they spent some money. And I mean, if I could find a way to do some like furniture restoration, I might just hire someone. I don't know how much it costs, but if it's reasonable, yo, drunk Upco came up on that suburban tip, dumpster diving. My gosh, this is my life. Well, that's what 6 years of college gets you. I guess it's all worth the 12 years of student loans I had to pay back. So here I am. Don't judge me. But yes, drunk uncle is clearly running around the suburbs, picking up stuff off of people's corners, and nobody called the cops. And that's a good thing. Let's keep moving.
All right. So every city, major city, has the dean of the sports airways. Like if you go in any major city, there's been a person who's done it for years, who's held it down for years, and that's the voice. That's the go-to person. That's the person who they get the kids together on a Sunday night because they want to hear what he or she has to say. That's the person that they're talking about. Well, back when you had water coolers in an office and you weren't at home. So I guess nowadays it's in your pajamas and Zoom. You talk about what's being said and heard. And in the city of Austin, they have this guy who I didn't know how powerful and amazing he was until I realized that people were throwing rose petals in front of him at all times. And I realized, oh, I must bow down to his greatness. And so I had to bring in a heavy hitter. We are less than 2 weeks away from the season opener. And so my man, and so I actually could fit him a friend, Bob Ballou, sports director at CBS Austin, is joining me for my podcast. Bob, I hope that's a hell of an intro for you.
I didn't know who you were introducing. I was wondering who was coming on the show with us. That's now I got something to live up to. That's pretty strong right there. That's well, I don't know if you, did you sit down and have to write that one out, or was that off the top of your head? Because that's well done.
You know, my goal is always to be a hype man, and I'm just, you know, at one point I want to be, but all I want to do is just get on stage and just hype up the crowd. So
I love it.
I'm practicing within that. So here's a funny story about Bob. So Bob and I live in the same community. Up in Northwest Austin. I don't know if you want me to say cities. I don't know. You know.
I don't care.
Okay, about, Cedar
yeah,
Park.
We're in Cedar Park. Cedar. Yeah, we're up in Cedar Park.
So I don't know if you want people stalking you or not.
We're in the burbs.
Yeah, definitely in the burbs. And so, and one of the suburban traits is people walk in the morning. So once every couple of weeks, I'll see Bob out there, or maybe he'll walk past like my little cul-de-sac and just send me out there with the kids. So I told Bob this on a Zoom call just a couple of weeks ago. So I would see Bob out with his wife, you know, on most mornings walking, and I kept thinking to myself, this woman really looks pregnant. But you can't ask a woman if she's pregnant. Like, you can't make the assumption. And then I don't think Bob and I were connected on social media, so I didn't really have a way to find out. So I kept looking every day, and in Bob's woman, like, she's small. She's not a, you know, she's not a big woman, so she was just stomach. But I kept thinking, like, if I ask her and she says she has a tumor, this is just going to be the worst conversation ever. But Bob announced just a couple of weeks ago that she actually had a baby. So congratulations, Papa. Tell me how this thing is going.
Yeah, thank you. And I think that's a great lesson for all guys, is to never, ever say it. As much as you want to ask, or if you want to say, hey, or, you know, when are you due or whatever, just don't ever say it, because it's just, if you get it wrong one time, you'll live it down the rest of your life. But you're right. I mean, like, if she turned around, if you looked at her from the backside, you wouldn't even know she was pregnant, because she was all stomach.
Yes.
But yeah, we had a baby a couple weeks ago, little Finley, our second daughter. We have a almost 3-year-old, and so this is very different this time, which obviously everybody that has kids knows it's everything's always different. Finley likes to stay up all night, which is great. So I've slept about an hour in the last 2 weeks, which is actually, for some reason, I've actually kind of been thriving on it. Maybe I'm one of those people that just doesn't need sleep, but, the nights that I've gotten like 2 or 3 hours, I am like, I get a ton of stuff done the next day. So, it's been wonderful. And yeah, it is really fun to, you know, it was funny when you said that, you said like, you'll be playing with your kids in the cul-de-sac. And all I could think was, cause I also live on a street that has a little cul-de-sac at the end of it. And I was like, that's just kind of an ode to our good friend, dear friend, Sean Adams. Cause he was always about the cul-de-sac kids.
Yeah.
And so Anwar and I are living that now, as with children, got some cul-de-sac kids. So, but yeah, that's, I appreciate you saying that. We're very excited.
That's good. How is she doing? How's her recovery going?
She's great. She was up and walking the next day, and or the same
champion,
day.
Champion.
Early in the morning. Yeah. We, she can be a little stubborn when it comes to that stuff. She's not one to really want to sit around ever. And so when we got home, you know, there's supposed to be this recovery time, and she is like trying to climb ladders and pull stuff off shelves and do it. And I'm like, can you just sit down for 5 seconds? Let me take care of you. Her parents are here. Let your parents take care of you. And so we finally got her a little bit settled in, and she's starting to get back to normal a little bit.
Congratulations, man. Thank you. You know, so it's, you know, last thing on birthing and stuff is my youngest son, Titan, when he was born, his mom was a very natural person. So he was born in a tub or in the house. So we did the birth tub thing.
Yeah.
And then it actually ended up being born like in a bed, to be quite honest with you.
Really?
It was the most interesting thing. So my first son came out through C-section. So that was that's traumatic. So you have to have a lot of things that occur within that for that to go on, right? Before you actually go to C-section route. So you had all that. And then the second one, so I've gone like two extremes, because I've gone from like C-section and seeing intestines on a table when I walk into like an operating room, to watching a natural tub birth and seeing a baby born in a bed. So thank goodness that's I won't incredible. Be doing that ever again.
Well, listen, I'll tell you what, I know this is, to some people this will sound insane, and to some people this will sound very normal. Both of our children were born via C-section, and I videotaped both of them on my phone. Like the doctor was like, get up here if you want to see it, video it, whatever. And so I've got video on my phone of both of my daughter's birth via C-section. And I think it is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Oh, wow. And there are some people that are like, I'm like, you want to see it? Cause you know, whatever. And they're like, no, get that phone away from me. Don't ever look at me again. And then there's some people that are like, yeah, absolutely. I want to see. And it's just a, I mean, you know, we don't need to go into the details, but you're right. It is very, if you're not into that kind of like, if you get queasy with blood or whatever, like, yeah, that's definitely not the time to do it.
Yeah. But I mean, like if there's a choice of having someone watch the C-section or a vaginal birth, you'd much rather them see the C-section of your wife
yes.
more so than that. So it's actually, we don't need you at the golf clubhouse showing the other stuff. So
correct. That's correct.
Congratulations. So, so listen, man, we are about, you know, I don't know what day, you know, but we're definitely
week or so.
week and change, you know, from the season opener. And, you know, I just kind of want to run some things past you, because this thing I've been kicking around, you know, I wrote this in my Sunday column, and we'll get into some details, but from a general perspective, I want to kind of get what your expectations of the year are. And then we'll get into the record portions later, but when I think of this season, Bob, I think of seven new assistant coaches. I think of three new coordinators, you know, offensive, defensive, special teams coordinators. I think of a team that didn't really have a spring football. I think of a team that we hear that really didn't have a lot of padded practices. I think was Tom on a conference call saying they've only gone back to back like a couple of times, you know, at all. I think of a team that's constantly being tested for COVID and still have those concerns that are out there. I think of a team that had the eyes of Texas, controversy for lack of better terms, but sure. had that issue. And then now, of course, also social things going on in the world where they took off a few days of practice to talk about it. Like, I see so many different obstacles here, and I know a lot of people are dealing with the same things, but when you look at this team, like, what becomes your expectations based off of all the things that they've been dealing with in the off season?
Well, I feel like every year we do this, and maybe it has become a, you know, this is my 14th year covering Texas football, in Austin, covered in San Antonio for 3 years before that, but in Austin, it's 13, 14 years. I started in 07. So however many seasons that is. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm the opposite of everyone, like almost every year.
where I'm like, they're going to be really good this year. Nobody's like, they're not going to be any good, or they're going to be okay. And I'm like, they're going to do it all this year. I am very confident. I am very, I feel comfortable saying that I think this team should not just compete for the Big 12 championship, but win it. There's no reason they shouldn't. I mean, I know there all this stuff that's going on, but when you start looking around the league and what other teams have, who they have returning, I don't see a reason Texas wouldn't compete for the Big 12 title this year, if not win it outright. That's my prediction is they win the Big 12 title this year. This is a huge year for Tom Herman. I know everything that's happened. I know there will be excuses if things go awry because of new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator, no spring football, on and on and on. But the talent level that this team has now, the direction Tom Herman is pulling this program, being year four, having some of the talent that he recruited, the guys that he specifically wanted as a head football coach, I believe this is a monster year for Texas. I think the talent is there. You have a senior quarterback that is one of the nation's best, and that's where it all starts. And when you look around the league, there's not a lot of conviction in the quarterback on any team in the league. I don't know that you can, and it obviously starts at Oklahoma coming off of Baker, Kyler, and Jalen. We don't know about Spencer Rattler. Could he be the best player in the country? Sure. Absolutely he could. But we don't know. We knew what Jalen Hurts was going to bring last year. We knew that. We knew that Kyler Murray was a special talent. We knew that Baker Mayfield had the qualities of being a special player. I don't know that anybody thought he was the number one pick in the draft, but we knew he had those qualities. Yes, we know Spencer Rattler comes with a great background and great pedigree, but we haven't seen him play yet. Oklahoma lost a lot off last year's team. Who are their go-to receivers? Is Charleston Rambo enough? Who are their running backs that, with Kennedy Brooks out now? Like, and it's not that I'm doubting Lincoln Riley. It's not that I'm saying Oklahoma's not going to be any good this year. But it's hard for me to just look at that flat out and just go, well, Oklahoma's going to win the Big 12. Well, you're saying that because of history. Look at it from a talent perspective right now and what you believe those teams are going to be. Brock Purdy and what Matt Campbell's done at Iowa State, I tout all the time. Brock Purdy's got to be the second best quarterback in the league, I would think, going into this year if you're just hammering down what you've seen. Spencer Sanders will hopefully take a next step for Oklahoma State. Obviously with Chuba and Tylan Wallace coming off the ACL. You can go through all these things. I just think in the end, it's hard for me to not say that Texas should be the favorite in this league this year because of what they have, because of what they have coming back, because of what we've seen in those final few games when they kind of let Joseph Osai and that defense roll. I'm just a big believer in it. And, we'll see. We'll see how it plays out in the next few months. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of where I stand, I guess, as we head into 2020.
Let me break this down. You put a few different things on the table. So
yeah.
Let me get with one, which is, are you saying this out of more optimism? And I'm not saying you're being optimistic or a fan or anything like that, but maybe the better word, here's a better choice. Are you giving this program a bigger benefit of the doubt than maybe it deserves? And why I say that is, Bob, there's been one big championship appearance since 2009. Okay, yep. So we're talking about a long stretch here where it hasn't happened. Oklahoma continues to win Big 12 championship after that championship. Like, so if we're basing it off of, in one way, you're saying, okay, we're basing Oklahoma's success potentially off what they've done previously. Well, this was a Texas team that won 7 games in the regular season last year, and they needed one to get to 8.
And I know what you mean there. I think I'm looking at it more of a look at what Oklahoma lost last year. I mean, look, in the end, every year that Tom Herman and Lincoln Riley are at these schools, they should be 1-2 in this league. Mm-hmm. There is no reason for either of these schools to not be number one or number two going into a season.
Fair.
But I'm just looking at it from where the program stands at Texas. I mean, yeah, if you're going to pin it down and say, if you're just going to base it off your beliefs, then Oklahoma should be the favorite. They are the favorite. Everybody's going to pick them to win the league. And I get that. But I just think with what they lost and with a quarterback that we don't know yet, is special, that we haven't seen play to prove that he's special. And I'm not, believe me when I say this, I'm not comparing Spencer Rattler to Rhett Bomar when I say this. But Rhett Bomar happened. And people forget that was the Paul Thompson, Rhett Bomar years, and they were still going to BCS bowl games, not with Rhett, but with Paul. But with Rhett Bomar happened. And it will happen again at some point. This isn't just going to be smooth cake, you know, smooth walking for Lincoln the rest of his career. I'm not saying it's going to happen this year. I don't know. This is why we do this, right? This is why we predict things. I think Spencer Rattler comes with the pedigree. I just think we haven't seen anything yet. And we know that Sam Ehlinger is special. We know what he can be. And if, you know, again, you're assuming a lot of things. Certainly I'm assuming a lot of things, that he's going to pick up this offense quickly, that everything's going to gel. The wide receivers are going to somehow come together, losing Devin and Colin. But, I don't know. It's just that maybe it's more of a hunch or a gut feeling or a, hey, it's year four. It's time for something to be really good here. It's been 11 years. It's time. I don't know. But I just, you know, I just think the building process that Tom Herman's put into this, to go to the Big 12 championship in year two, to suffer a little bit of a setback last year, or a lot of a setback last year, a lot bit of a setback, I guess. This is the year that they have to take that step. And I think even Tom knows this is a year they have to take a major step forward.
Is there anything that could occur this season for you, Bob, that you would give Herman a mulligan?
In college football now, guys want to play. It's hard to have two guys that you can fully trust, you know, the way Georgia had, you know, Fromm and Jacob, good Lord, went to Washington. I don't know why I can't. Eason.
Yes.
It's hard to have those two guys that are that good every single year, 1-2. So, you know, like last year, had Jalen Hurts gone down, certainly we would have seen Spencer Rattler, but Tanner Mordecai would have been there. And I don't know that Oklahoma's a playoff team with Tanner Mordecai as his quarterback. So you would have given Lincoln Riley a pass if that didn't happen. I think, especially with Sam being a senior and everything that comes into a season, I think that's the one thing that's a mulligan for Tom Herman. I don't know that anything else is. Now, COVID aside, I mean, obviously if you're losing your entire offensive line for three games, that's going to be a little bit of an issue. But I want to bring this up too, because I thought this was the funniest part. We talked to Tom last Sunday, and I thought the funniest thing that happened was when Max Olson asked him, hey, did you see the Austin Peay Central Arkansas game? And he said, no. And Max said, well, Austin Peay lost its three long snappers. Herman just put his head in his hands and started shaking his head like, I can't even imagine what would we do in that situation? How would that work? That's a coach's biggest nightmare going into this season. But I think, you know, coronavirus aside, I think the one thing on the field that you give any head coach, really, unless they're crazy on the hot seat, but any coach of mulligan would be something like Sam Ehlinger going down. Now, if Sam Ehlinger goes down, they can't go 0-10. I mean, that's, you know, there's qualifications to go along with that. But certainly if you have to put Casey Thompson in for an entire season or eight games or seven games or whatever it is, if you have to play Hudson Card, whatever those things are, I think that's the mulligan for Tom Herman this year.
Okay. You did talk about Sam, and clearly this is, you know, a huge year. This is year four, and it's, you know, we've seen him grow up, right? We've seen him from the young kid who was the freshman trying to battle Shane Buechel, going back and forth. We saw the, you know, the interceptions that happened through that freshman year, the pass against Oklahoma State where you're just like, what happened? But then we've also seen him grow, right? And we've seen him go head to head with a Kyler Murray and win that matchup, you know, a couple of years ago. We saw him go head to head last year with the kid from LSU. Why am I even forgetting this guy's name?
Right? Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow, thank you. But we saw him go head-to-head to the point where Ed Orgeron said, we were hoping that they didn't get the ball again because we couldn't stop him, right? Yeah. So we know what Sam can be on his best days. But what we didn't know was that he was battling a rib injury last year, that he didn't really let a lot of people know him because we know he's a tough guy. And Sam is the kind of guy that clearly you have to shut him down because he will continue going and it's going and going. So my question to you is how big of a year is this for a guy who he's going to, from a stat perspective, he's going to have a bunch of stats. He's going to be in the record books for years to come, but he still doesn't have a Big 12 championship. And that's important. And he would be one of, I think, four guys that I got to look it back up. I think he would be one of four guys in the history of Texas that started from a freshman on and didn't win one. So what does this season mean for Sam? And, you know, just kind of give me your overall thoughts on maybe even almost a legacy year for him.
I love this because, you know, I know Sam doesn't want to get caught up in that kind of stuff. Doesn't want to have those conversations with us, but you know it's in his head. Not in his head in a bad way, but in his head because this is all he ever wanted to do. That's why I keep saying he's going to play A&M before he leaves here. Somehow, some way, because he is built for that game. He is built for Texas OU. He's built for Texas A&M. He grew up bleeding burnt orange to the point that this is all he ever wanted to do. Now he's 3 years in, and I think the NCAA just granted him like six more years, so he's got plenty of time.
Yes, he does.
But like, I mean, I could even see a scenario where he plays this year, and then the NFL draft's like, you're going to be a second or third round pick or whatever you're going to be, and he's like, yeah, I think I want to go back and play another year because this is so much fun. I love college football. Mm-hmm. I am. You know, you talked about that freshman year. I mean, it seems like so long ago, and also it doesn't, in the sense that that first year he fumbled against USC in double overtime. You mentioned the interception against Oklahoma State where everybody's like, what was that? He threw the pick late against Texas Tech.
Yes.
And everybody's like, this is not good. And then he comes out in year two and immediately throws two picks against Maryland and they lose that game. And everybody's like, I mean, do you switch quarterbacks? Do you go back to Bouchelle? Do we change everything that happened? And then he settled in and got really good and got to the point where he felt comfortable being the quarterback that they needed him to be. And you're right. He is going to set all kinds of records. He's got to win a Big 12 championship. You can't leave your legacy at Texas as we beat Georgia in the Sugar Bowl my sophomore year and I yelled, we're back. That can't be it. Mm-hmm. It can't be. Mm-hmm. And so I do think, and that's another reason that I'm probably more optimistic or as optimistic as anyone about this year, because I just think he knows and feels like he has so much to prove. Again, not to anyone else, not to the Texas fan base, but to himself and to his teammates and to his coaches that he is, you know, that guy, that he is QB1, that he is a guy that everybody will remember at Texas forever. Does it happen? I mean, obviously we don't know. You can't predict those things, but you know, he's that guy in the locker room. He's tried really hard, I think, to be the guy that his teammates need him to be the quintessential QB1 across college football, to take those next steps. And I just think there's a very good opportunity for him to do it. Now he has to go do it, but he's talented enough and he's got enough talent around him that he can, I think, finish this thing off. But again, you go back to every story we've ever told about him, listen, being close with Colt McCoy and following him growing up and wanting to be like him and do the things that Colt did. And, you know, now he's got his opportunity going into a senior year that could be a first senior year, could be one of two. We just don't know what he's going to do yet. But certainly there's the opportunity is there for him to do everything he wants to do.
Let me ask you a couple more, Bob. So,
yeah,
as relates to him, though, If you're a Texas fan, you've got to feel good knowing that in every game you go into this year, you have the quarterback advantage, right? I mean, there's not a single game you look at and you go, ooh, okay, you look at it and say, okay, regardless of what happens with Spencer Rattler, you go in with the advantage. Regardless of Brock Purdy, where you're playing, you're going in with the advantage. And like last year, you didn't have the advantage against Joe Burrow. You didn't have – previous years, you didn't have an advantage against Baker Mayfield. You didn't have the advantage against Jalen Hurts. You didn't have the advantage against Kyler Murray, right? So it's got to mean something to know at the end of the day you've got a guy who – clear cut is better than the other guy on the other side of the field, right?
And that's where I think that's a lot of where I'm talking about my confidence in Big 12 play comes from with him, because there's not a team they're going to play. And maybe, you know, we didn't know at the time that Joe Burrow was going to be who he was, but when we saw him play, we went, oh my goodness. It is pretty amazing to think that that's 3 years in a row that Sam's gone head to head against the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah.
And really played well in all three games against that, you know, against that player, or against however you want to compare that. But I agree with you. I mean, there's you look at their schedule this year. You look at the teams in the Big 12 that I mean, the Skylar Thompsons of the world, you go across the board at all these schools, and there's just no one that you're like, well, I'd rather have him than Sam. And again, I think Spencer Rattler and even Spencer Sanders a little bit are probably the two guys that would be right up there. But I would take Sam over both of them right now. I think that's a huge mind part of all of this too. That is, when you're talking about focusing in and visualizing who you're going to be in the mental side of football, when you have a guy that's back there that makes everybody else on the field feel comfortable, that's a huge head start against any other team.
Give me what are you the strengths of this year's team, the things, you know, that you, obviously you're saying, all right, they should, outside of Sam, they should be really good at this thing. And then give me some of the little concerns that you might have.
Absolutely. So I think I love this running back room. I want to see this running back room. You know, I want to see what this group can do. And it's first and foremost, if there was one player on that offense that you said makes Sam Ehlinger feel the most comfortable, I mean, not on the offensive line. I think, you know, Cosme and Kerstetter and those guys he likes, but if there's one position player that you've got to go with that is Sam's check down or go-to guy or whatever you want to call it, for me, I think it might be Roschon Johnson. I think he got so comfortable with him last year, being in the quarterback room with him and then moving – to running back and then seeing what he did as a running back. I think Roschon is a guy that will hold some things together this year in some really unexpected times. I mean, obviously Keontae has the talent. Everybody's eyes are popping and talking about Bijan Robinson and what he can do. So I think that running back room is going to be fun. And compared to where it was a year ago when he didn't even have a running back, because everybody was hurt, they're down like their fifth string walk on. I think he feels a little more comfortable on that front. On offense, I would say, you know, you feel somewhat comfortable with the offensive line. There's some moving pieces there with injuries or, just inexperience and those kind of things. But I would think you'd feel fairly comfortable there. Wide receiver is the question mark. I mean, that's the, you know, on offense, that's got to be the part where you look at and say, you know, it's not – Duve was unbelievable last year. I mean, he – you know, Colin Johnson – didn't have the numbers that he normally, I think everybody expected him to have because of injury, only played seven games. But at the same time, he was a guy you could always trust when he was in the game. Who are those guys now? How much do you trust Brennan Eagles? How much do you trust Jake Smith? How much do you trust Jordan Whittington? Is Tariq Black really a stabilizer? You can go on and on with a lot of these guys in that room and say, who do I trust? Who does Sam trust? Is Josh Moore going to play a bigger role as he comes back from a year suspension? I don't know. I don't know what the answer is on a lot of these guys, but that's what they've got to figure out. And that's what, obviously, without spring football, without, you can go throw, but until you get in those big time game situations, who's the guy that you're going to throw it to that, and it's not Devin Duvernay catching everything. I mean, we know he did that, and that was you don't have that every year with your team. So, who are those guys and who are the guys you trust? And that's going to be, to me, on offense, the biggest issue. Defensively, I mean, look,
Here's what I'm trying to figure out. I actually like this. I think getting a little feedback from you on this is going to be fun too.
Okay.
Look at the defensive back room, right? So there were a lot of injuries last year, obviously. There were a lot of guys that got a little experience. But when you start talking about that defensive back room, who are the guys you actually trust versus the guys that you just kind of know their name because they had to play? Who are the guys that you feel like are going to be the guy to take the next step? So, like, obviously you trust Caden Stearns. I feel like most people probably trust BJ Foster. Jalen Green was off to a good start. Deshaun Jameson played a bunch, and I think people like him and like his ability. Is Kenyatta Watson a guy that's going to step up and be that good? Is Josh Thompson really the guy in the back that can do this? What about Chris Brown? What about Chris Adamora? This list goes on and on and on and on of guys. Anthony Cook's still here, right? I mean, Tyler Owens played last year. It is this really interesting bunch back there of really talented guys, but who do you trust in a one-on-one situation? Who do you trust to make a big play late in the game? And that's what I think is going to be interesting in that defensive backfield, is to see who they line up and, you know, on day one against UTEP, who are the guys that are back there, but then who are the guys that actually make the plays as they go throughout the year?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think that when we talked to, like, Chris Ash the other day, I thought when he was talking about tackling and the importance of that, I thought that was key, as was totally relates to the DB room, because I think tackling over the past few years has been horrible. And it seems like the guys are trying to put hits on people as opposed to wrapping up. I mean, you know, Blink and CeeDee Lamb just juked another Texas defender, right? I mean, it's just, you know, and a lot of that was just poor techniques back there. Now, clearly a lack of a pass rush had something to do with the DBs kind of being out there too long and a little bit on the island, but the simple plays that you felt like, okay, just go ahead and make this play, get off the field, wrap up, didn't happen. So I think you have with all the guys you named, and I was waiting for you, the only one you didn't name was BJ Foster. But you know, it's like, to your
point. And you definitely trust him. He's absolutely up there with,
when he's healthy,
with Caden Stearns. When he's healthy, he's a guy that, I mean, I'm 100%. He's a guy that, you know, I would trust back there. But and who knows, maybe a guy like Xavion Alford, or so there's somebody that comes in as a freshman. I mean, that's what I mean by it. It's like, there are so many names in that room that we've heard in the last 365 days, but who are the guys that are going to make the plays in the big moment and make that tackle and make that play that you have to win those games? So I think that's the interesting thing. Obviously the guys that, you know, up front, I think we kind of know what we're getting a little bit. I mean, we know Joseph Osai, to me, if he's not a top three player in the nation at the end of this year as a defensive, all the defensive talk, I'll be surprised. I just think his talent is pouring over, and he's going to be one of the best in the country. But you kind of have an idea of who the playmaker. I mean, Taquan Graham's going to be a guy they look to make huge plays this year. And you can go through that list. You know, linebacker's the concern. And who are those guys going to, you know, it's kind of the same at wide receiver. Who are the guys that are going to make the plays there? But in the end, I feel like if Chris Ash can do what you just said and convince them that tackling is kind of important, I think that can be at least a solid bunch, because the talent's certainly there.
Here's the last thing, Bob. All right. So there it is. We'll wrap it up with this. So in my column, you don't feel like you have to hold yourself to this. So you can put as many caveats as you want to. But in my column on Sunday, I predicted an 8-2 finish for Texas. And I outlined, you know, the concerns that everything I talked to you about as far as the new coaches, COVID, everything like that. I also put in there that I cannot ignore that throughout Tom Herman's history, there's always been one slip up against a team that they should have beat, right? Last year it was TCU. TCU finishes 5-7. Before that, two years before that, Maryland happened again, and Oklahoma State happened, right? And Maryland finished that season 5-7. Oklahoma State finishes the regular season 6-6. And then previous year to that, it was Maryland and Tech, right? And Maryland had finished 4-8 that year. And I mean, I took it back to his whole history, man. I mean, even the first year in Houston, you know, they were finished 13-1, but they lost to UConn, and UConn finished 6-7 that year. So my struggle with the prediction is like, okay, until I know that there's going to be this team that Texas should be, that they don't lose to, I'm like, I got to give them the one, and I'm giving them the one conference thing. But if I had to go to you and you had to, with all your caveats, say, hey, this is what I think the Texas record's going to look like this year, what would you say?
So I literally just made a prediction in a publication that they asked me for my numbers.
Perfect. So you're on record.
And I'm on record. So it's in a magazine. So at least if
you can pop the magazine,
nobody believes it. You can, it's just Horns Illustrated. They just send out their thing every year.
Yeah.
8-2. That's exactly what I said. And I'm in the same boat as you for those same reasons. There's always one that sneaks up and gets them. Now I will say this. I do lean more 9-1.
Okay.
But I also know that 8-2 comes with the COVID caveats. It comes with still got to beat Oklahoma and Dallas. The two games on the schedule that I probably look at more than any other that would, I don't know what the right word is, frighten me. Well, one of them's good for frightening because it's Halloween, is at Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. Cause you got to go on the road and win there. And that's always tough. But December 5th in Manhattan, Kansas, that's never fun. And it's going to be 4 degrees. That to me is the one. And especially if you put the pressure on top of it, of this is a one team that could go to a college football playoff if they can win this game and the Big 12 championship, start talking about all those things that happen. Those would be the two. At Oklahoma State and at Kansas State, I think would frighten you a little bit. And then obviously Dallas. So if you take two of those, if you win two of those three games, that could really easily be 9-1. Because a lot of those games, you know, the other road game is what, Tech and Kansas. I as much as the history would suggest that winning in Lawrence is always tough for some reason with this team, I would still think they would win that game. And then, to open Big 12 play at Texas Tech, you never know. I mean, weird things happen in Lubbock, and who knows, how that'll go down. But in the end, I'm with you. I think 8-2, but I still do lean a little 9-1. And that's, in the end, I don't think that's being overly optimistic. I don't think that's something where you're putting too much expectation on this team. I think that this is a program that at the point now where that needs to be the expectation every year is 9-1, 10-0, well, whatever it'll be, 12-0 once you get back to it. But this, you know, you're like this 8-2, 9-1, 10-0 is the expectation now. And who knows where this goes because of everything that's going on in the world and how all this plays out. But for now, I think it's fun to have these predictions, to be able to say what we believe. And I really am, I've got conviction on this. I'm not like worried that they're going to go 6-4 or 7-3 and I'm going to be wrong. I'm a big believer that 8-2 is legitimate. And like I said, I would lean 9-1.
Bob, how did it feel to have a football conversation where for months we couldn't talk about football? We didn't know back in March and in the spring what this thing was going to look like. We had Zoom stuff. We didn't really know up until a few weeks ago if we were going to have a season. And here we are, and we're actually having a real football dialogue conversation. Was this therapeutic for you? Because it felt good to me.
It did. Listen, number one, it's actually nice that it's realistic because that, you know, it hasn't been realistic for a long time, and it still may not happen. We don't know. Mm-hmm. We still got, 4 weeks till they get to Lubbock. So, I mean, all of this could still blow up.
Sure.
But all that said, what I think's been interesting about this and the way I've felt about this, it's September 1st. This is when everyone is so excited for college. This is like the anticipation is built for 8 months. Every month it gets closer and closer. You're like, oh, college football is finally going to get here. I haven't felt any anticipation at all for this year. Not in the least. It's so frustrating and it bums me out so much because college football is my favorite sport to watch by far. And I get so excited for it. And I've just kind of been like, I mean, are we even going to play? Like, is it even going to happen? And I just feel like that's been you kind of drudge through it all. It's nice that we're starting. I'm still not there. You talk about UTEP
Saturday. It's like, okay. And then there's another week off. And then are we even going to get to Big 12? I mean, like, I can't, it's like depressing for me to talk about. But it is therapeutic to have these conversations, to start being able to actually talk about like position battles and what matters and what doesn't matter. And you know, how these things are going to play out. I think that's you're right. It is therapeutic and it is nice to begin to have these type of conversations. And now let's get to September 26th and get Big 12 play rolling so we can really actually believe that it's happening.
Just looking through an email, UT announced that Texas will kick off against UTEP on September 12th at 7 p.m., Bob. So we got a late game there. And
I'll tell you what I like. I like Texas Tech at 2:30.
Texas Tech at 2:30 is nice.
That's nice.
Tortillas
in the air at 2:30. You don't have to go there at night.
Yes.
Now this is where you got to backtrack, because it doesn't matter if you go there at night. There are going to be like 12,000 people in the stands. None of that matters anymore.
Yeah, that's
you know what I mean? Like, see, that's the stuff we got to get used to, because I'm like, you don't want to go there at night, and the fans have been drinking all day, and they're raucous, and then you're like, that doesn't matter. Nobody can be there.
No.
So that's going to be another interesting part of this. And it's like, you know, Texas OU at 11, you know, who's going to be in the stands? What's it going to look like? There's no state fair. There will be Fletcher's Corny Dogs, which is exciting, but no state fair. So I think that all of that is what that really took me back there. I was like, man, that 2:30 kick doesn't really, like, the time doesn't really matter.
No, it doesn't. But from a work perspective, and just stuff that nobody outside of our industry cares about, it's great for deadlines, and it allows you to do a few more things. But of course, from a media perspective, we have to see if we're even getting press passes. Where can we go? Like, so, I mean,
I don't think we can shoot. I think I think the Big 12 is going to install a rule that we can't shoot on the field like we always do for games. So I mean, there are all kinds of things that, if that's the case, then, and we're doing Zoom interviews after the game and not going to the locker room, then it's like, you know, what's our next step? I mean, there's so many interesting dynamics to what this season's going to look like.
Yes. Well, I'm excited that we'll be able to at least sort it out, hopefully make it through this one. And then once we get through this one, hopefully we get towards something that looks like normal. I'm not expecting tailgating, by the way, this year at UT. But hopefully we'll get to something that looks like some semblance of normal. And then we'll see what goes from there. So we got you now for 8-2, leaning more towards 9-1.
Leaning,
but, you know, but conservative bet. And I think history has told us, as relates to UT, it's always best to be conservative, because if you drink too much burnt orange Kool-Aid in the off season, sometimes you end up spitting it out. It's funny you mentioned Kansas. I you know, you said it's supposed to be a tough place to win. Barely beat Kansas at home last year. Like, it was a last-minute drive by Sam Ellinger to get past Kansas. So this still could be a potentially tougher game, which every Longhorn fan wants to slam their head on the table when he kind of talked about, man, we're struggling to get past Kansas now, Oklahoma State.
Lord, remember, they had to beat Kansas to go to the Big 12 title game 2 years ago, and they won that game 24-17. Yeah. I mean, this is, for whatever reason, when they play in Lawrence, it's like they don't know where they are or what they're doing, and they've had all those comebacks. Vince Young had the comeback. Case McCoy had the comeback. Like, it's bizarre. I don't know what it is, but maybe a little bit of Texas arrogance bleeds over every now and then. I don't know.
We'll see. Well, thanks, Bob. Go be with your kids. Have a fantastic day. I'll see you out walking in our burbs soon enough. So you're golfing. When's the last time you've been out golfing, though, Bob? Real quick.
I played in a tournament on Monday. The Hannon Cup is coming up, and they do a pre-tournament pro-am out at UT Golf Club. They honor longtime UT golf coach George Hannon, and they create scholarships for golfers in the area. They have more than $400,000 in scholarships. So an incredible job by the Hannon Cup Association, as always. And that was the last time I played, but you know, my Fridays at Twin Creeks are usually, the afternoons are usually pretty golf heavy. So, you know, once we can reopen everything, I want to see you back up there and buy you a can of Coke. That's all we drink.
Yeah, that's all I drink. you're on, you don't know this, but the name of this podcast is called Your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast.
Oh, yeah. Okay, that's right. So, that's right. Good point.
Yeah, I alcohol has already been established, Bob.
Yes. Okay. Then I'll buy you a drink next time I see you, Twin, and we'll once we get back to some kind of normal, we can do that again.
Thanks so much, Bob. All right. Thanks for joining. Thank you guys for listening. And remember, live each day like it was the last, because one day it will be. We'll talk soon.